Blog Talk Radio.
We welcome the night.
A radio show where we discuss all the latest movies and news from the world of horror. Joining me tonight, as always, is my co-host, Ian. Ian, are you there?
I am here.
How are you this week?
Pretty good. Suffering major heartburn all week, though.
Oh, boy. Yeah, but we're here, and we got a pretty big show tonight. Interesting show because we have a limited theatrical release review, which is not going to be that limited because reasons, and convention results. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later. But the big news, and again, there's like not even really a lot of major news. I mean, we were talking off air about The Craft getting the remake, getting its cast, and I don't care. You know, it's like, I like the original. You know, I do. You know, you as well. And I was just saying, like, there's been numerous films that's come out over the years that's exactly like The Craft, and now they're going to remake The Craft. You know, like, we had The Coven, like, a couple years back that was exactly like The Craft, but it was, like, British. And then there's just, like, again, they ripped off the freaking cover of the poster art of The Craft, if you look up The Coven. Of course, you know, I don't know. It's unnecessary, really. But again, that's how most remakes are. And then
right.
Besides that, really nothing else news-wise. So luckily, we have two other things to talk about to make up this show. We are doing our Colorgoria marathon, and I would have thought that Three from Hell would have included in that, but we'll get into that. So we might just have a week off from Colorgoria, and we'll come back next week with two films to close out the marathon, and we'll get into the Halloween marathon next month. So, okay, let's get into this. Three from Hell is Rob Zombie's latest venture to bringing back the Firefly family after The Devil's Rejects. I went Monday, and this is a three-night event. So Monday, we are greeted to a two-minute, maybe around shorter than that, introduction by Rob Zombie, talking about how the film came to be, talking about, like, you know, like people are saying, we're going to do another, you know, another film with these characters, and he started thinking about it, and then he, like, sort of brushed some ideas against, you know, like, to some of the actors, I think Bill and, of course, his wife, and then, like, they started going back and forth, and then he kind of went to writing the script, and he just worked on it, and I believe after maybe Lords of Salem, he started to work on the script or something like it, because he was I think it was Lords of Salem. It wasn't 31. I don't believe it was 31. But it was like Lords of Salem when he was like getting talking about Devil's Rejects, and then of course he went on to do 31, and then here we are with Three from Hell after that. And he just, you know, he did, you know, he made the film, and there we are. And also on Monday you got a free mini poster, Three from Hell mini poster, and then Tuesday I believe you got a bumper sticker, and then Wednesday was the double feature of Devil's Rejects and Three from Hell back to back. So Monday was kind of the way to go, in a sense, unless you really wanted to watch Devil's Rejects again, then why not? But if you already, you know, probably already seen it, you already know what you're doing. But anyway, Monday, that was the Monday thing. It was kind of packed. It wasn't Jeepers Creepers 3 packed limited screening. But it still was a decent crowd. But again, it's for these limited events, it's kind of expensive. I think it's like $13 for a ticket, and that's kind of a lot from what I'm used to paying. Usually, I pay like $5 at most. So okay, that's enough of that. Let's get into the film. So Three from Hell picks up basically right where Devil's Rejects turns off, but it's done in a very different way. It's in a faux documentary news report where it comes on, and like the reporter, like the fire. It's like a, in a sense, it's like a little mini documentary. And it's the very beginning, like the first couple minutes, talking about them surviving. They had like 20 bullet holes each in their body, and they miraculously survived. And then they get into, like, trial and jury stuff, sort of like Charles Manson, like when, like, they had the camera on him, he was going through hallways and stuff like that and talking, and like, the followers of Manson, the three girls. So it's a similar vibe of, like, a Manson footage that you'd usually see, but it was done with Otis, Baby, and Captain Spaulding, you know, talking and everything. And they're all separated into different jails and prisons. Baby is in a confinement cell by herself. Otis is by himself. And, of course, Captain Spaulding's facing death charges. And that's one of the, again, I have to go into a little bit of spoilers because it's justified because it's the very beginning of the movie. So, again, they're all, you know, the end of Devil's Rejects, I mean, it's a good, you know, if you want to say it's a good farewell, honestly, if you think that they died, right? It's a good way to, you know, way to end that film when you see it. Like, all right, that's a good beginning to end movie. It's great pace and everything. It's a fun little 2-hour adventure, and it has a good payoff, you know. This one, I don't know what it was, but of course the pacing on this one's way off compared to Devil's Rejects and even House of a Thousand Corpses. It just has a god awful pacing for some reason with the faux news and then the where it leads off to what's the story. Because like for a while you're like, what's the story of this one, you know? And it takes a while, and then it kind of changes again. The main thing. One of the main things I had an issue with is, like, again, how Devil's Rejects had ended. It was a perfect farewell, if you want to look at it that way. Like, it was great. And then they pick up this one, and then Captain Spaulding is, you know, they're all in their separate, you know, separate prison list, you know, whatever. But, like, Otis had, like, so many life terms, but they do Captain Spaulding dirty. Because he's like this big iconic character now in the horror world, and the way that, and just the way that they handled him, like he's very, very small role, like maybe a minute in the film, because he's getting interviewed, and then he's sentenced to death, right? That's it. He's sentenced to death. You don't see it. It's a news article, like, and a little paper pops up, like Captain Spaulding, murderous clown, sentenced to death, and that's it. And so I thought that was a terrible way to the send off Captain Spaulding. But that's just me. I mean, it just felt like after everything that he did, and you know, this big, you know, the beloved character, and they're just gonna sweep it under the rug. You know, just it felt odd. And the way that, again, like I said, the way it was in Devil's Rejects, it was a good sort of farewell, and then you have this, and it's just like, really? That's the way you're going to do it? And it just felt like he was done dirty, in a sense. You know what I'm saying, Ian? Ian?
Oh, sorry. My... Yeah, sorry, I had my mute on. I don't know why. My phone is being stupid, and it's, sorry, it kept pushing buttons, and I almost added another call to this. I don't know what's going on with my phone today, but this thing is pissing me off today. You know, I've heard mixed reviews about this movie since it came, when it, like, a bunch of people saw it, and I was kind of, you know, mad because all the theaters around me were not playing it, the ones that I could get to easy. It was the only one that was there was kind of far off, and I was like, no. So I couldn't make it, and I was so sad. But yeah, no, that's what I heard a lot though, was the, you know, the pacing issues with this film, and you know, hopefully they, like, when they do that big 4K whatever release that they're doing with the documentary with him, hopefully we get a little bit more of an answer to why they did that to Spaulding.
Yeah,
but that kind of bums me out, because I really like that character.
Yeah,
but I guess maybe because he was, you know, he was getting sick and old, you know, like he is in the hospital. I wonder if,
yeah,
like he had a lot of medical issues that we didn't know about.
No, I mean, it does make sense in a way, because once I get into the rest of the film, I mean, it makes sense what they did, but I just figured, you know, instead of like that, just let him die off in the, you know, he didn't survive the car shootout, you know, that would have been, I've been okay with that. You're like, okay, he didn't make it, you know, he's an old dude,
right?
20 bullet holes in his body. It made sense he wouldn't survive it, but the other two did, because
exactly.
They're younger and they're, but just him surviving and then just getting sentenced to death and just sweeping that under the rug like that, kind of bad, in my opinion. But anyway, they're all, you know, that's the only kind of spoiler I'll give. So they're all sentenced, you know, they're all in their separate place. Spaulding sentenced to death. Otis, like again, they have like the faux, you know, news footage of Otis is in this chain gang, and Danny Trejo's character is also a part of the chain gang, and he says, you know, he basically, again, he does something at the chain gang. We're introduced to a new character. We're introduced to Winslow, who is the stepbrother of both Otis and Baby. So again, they kill Captain Spaulding, sends him to death, and they introduce Otis, not Otis, but Winslow. And he's like, I forgot the character, like the news report gave him, like Midnight Wolfman or something like that. It was something like this, something Wolfman. But the he releases Otis from the chain gang, and he does something to Danny Trejo's character, which kind of sets the whole events for later on in the movie. And so it's Winslow and Otis, you know, figuring out how to kick bait, you know, get Baby out of her confinement cell. And then we're introduced to Baby, and she's, again, this takes place in 1988. So, like, they survived it, they went through everything, and now she's been in confinement for 10 years after the events of Devil's Rejects and surviving. So it's 1988. And we have Dee Wallace. She plays Greta. She's like a dyke security guard that watches over, sort of like a hate fuck mentality between both of them, because
yeah.
Greta just, you know, she's butch, and you know, she's really dykey, short hair, all that, glasses, and she hates Baby so much. and she tries to kill her by putting her in like these predicaments where she is bringing other more powerful or bigger women, you know, the butch women, try to kill baby, and it just doesn't work. And so she's like in that whole thing with Greta, and like the warden is like, you know, she's like on parole for some times, and she's like talking about, you know, she's like all loopy now because she's been in confinement for so long, and she's like, she's more over the top than normal, in a sense, with Sherry Moon Zombie's performance. And so she's like, oh, yeah, I killed that person, this and that and this and that. They're just, like, throwing it off. You know, she's all crazy. And so Otis and Winslow decides to visit the warden and to free baby because that's the only way they can do it. And, again, it just goes on from there where it kind of just – again, there's really – I can't really go into too much because, again, I'll go into spoilers. But the thing is, like, this film is very – I wouldn't say by the numbers, but it's very – if you've seen Devil's Rejects, it's very similar. And in a sense, I mean, that's what I guess he was going for. But with the story, like, I didn't exactly know why this story, personally. Because it was just, like, a way to – to get them back out into the public, in a sense, after everything's said and done, for another adventure, because, you know, you lose the old guy, get a new guy, and they just go on and do their merry business, and murder and mayhem and all that stuff that causes chaos and panic. The gore, I'll say this, it's more gorier than Rejects. There's when Baby is fighting the two butch women in the cellar, there's some embowelments and like eyes like hanging off the face. There's more blood. There's also some, you know, like there was in Reject, there's some off CGI gunshots and blood squibs that you could tell. It can add to the scene, but it was, you know, it wasn't anything bad, but it's just like it's noticeable. But the story is just like when they go to the warden's house, that and everything that goes on there, that was very similar to the motel scene in Rejects. And then there's even a face, a skin face, like in Rejects, but they actually kind of show the aftermath instead of just like the skin face on the girl and she runs into the road. This one, they show the face of the victim and the peeled skin on the tree there. The dialogue's okay. There's some interesting dialogue, especially with the two hikers and Winslow, and he's talking about titties. That was a pretty good scene. I don't want to give it away, but it was the dialogue's still good in the movie. And there's some okay moments I wish they kind of fleshed out, because, like, when minor spoiler, when the free baby, because it's not that really that big of a spoiler. Otis, you know, it's been 10 years. It's been 10 years, and, like, Winslow's, like, saying, well, she wants to drive, and Otis, like, saying, as soon as you get behind this wheel, we're going to get pulled over or something like that. And Winslow's, like, saying, she's been locked up for 10 years. She's just happy to get out. And then Otis goes, like, I know, like, I've known her all my life. There's something wrong with her. And that's the thing where she's been confined, and she's, like, sort of going loopy, because there's, like, a scene in here where she looks in, like, a grate that's connected to her cell wall, and she sees a ballerina with a cat mask dancing. Well, a cat ballerina dancing with a Phantom of the Opera mask on the cat mask. And so, like, she's going all crazy in a sense. I mean, there's some decent parts, but then it just, like, it for a while there's nothing. It's just kind of boring for a while because the pace was off, and it's just like they go from here to there, and then they go to the motel, and then, again, baby's going nuts. And then they decide to go somewhere else, and then that the ending sort of feels like something out of a Mexican standoff movie. Sort of in the vein, I kind of thought it was in the vein of like Way of the Gun or Once Upon a Time in Mexico, how the very ending of that sort of plays out in this, because it's just a big, you know, standoff movie at the end of it. And it has its moments, but it's still nothing really like you would want after 15 years.
Right.
But, again, after everything, you know, like they do a lot of things in there, but at the end of it, it's just, I enjoyed, I liked watching it. You know, it was cool to see again, but there's just like parts of it. It's just like it felt off. Like this is the story they're telling. The pacing was not good. Like, again, it started off with that faux documentary, faux news stuff, and then, everything goes on from there of them getting baby out and then them just running from people so they don't get caught, and then they decide to go somewhere else, and then it turns into basically, because, again, they introduce a character that's very similar to the William Forsythe's character in Rejects, who wants to get revenge on a certain character that died at the beginning of the movie. And so it's like they do that, and it's like very similar, to Rejects in very common ways. And it's just people, the dialogue was good in some parts, but again, it's like some of it wasn't. And it just, it was all kind of all over the place. And I can't really say too much else, even though I feel like I've gave a lot of info. Ian, anything you want to know or anything you want to add from what I've talked about? I mean, I know you already said a few things, but, is there anything else you would want to know?
Well, it kind of sounds very clunky, Like, it's just... It's good, but it just messes up a lot. And I think clunky is a pretty accurate way to describe that. But, because it's the DVD is getting released, in October? I forgot what day.
4th. I think it's October 4th. I think it's the very beginning.
Well, when it gets released, I'm going to buy it and, hopefully, or rent. Just wait until it's on Redbox and rent it.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sucks. And this, honestly, I kind of figured. Like, I was like, it's been 15 years, and it's. I this is kind of what I was expecting it to happen. Like the whole pacing issues and. Kind of just disappointing because I really love that series. My wife likes that series, and she doesn't like those kind of movies. So that says a lot for that. But nothing really else I can
on
about.
Rejects had that that grindhouse sort of feel to it, and it's dirty and gritty. This one just did not have that aesthetic to it. There's parts of it where it tries to be, but it kind of doesn't hit that mark. I mean, I guess you could say that Rejects is in a bubble, it's in a capsule of its own where it just seems perfect. Because like I said, it has great, I watched that the week before just so I, cause it's been a while since I've seen Rejects and I wanted to get it back into my memory. Like, boom, 2 hours and you're done. And this one's 2 hours too. And it was just like, okay, this is a slog. where are we going? Because it just like, it felt like it didn't know what its purpose was in a sense.
Right.
It was like, okay, okay, we're going to get out of prison. What are we going to do? Where are we going? What are these characters doing? It's just like, there was no rhyme or reason. Even in the movie, like, okay, what are we going to do? And I'm like, okay, there's a part in there, and where Winslow's talking to Otis, and like, okay, so what's the plan? And then Otis goes, you know what? I never thought about that. I didn't think we even get this far. So even in the movie, there's like, I don't know. So it just felt like it's like there's really no rhyme or reason. You know, it's just like, okay, here we are introducing the characters again after so long, just to get them back to the public. You know, just like there's really no no point in it. And it sucks because, again, I wanted this one to be a little bit, you know, in the vein of Rejects. And it just, you know, I wouldn't say it's really a failed follow-up, but it just does not live up in my expectations of what I kind of thought this would be. Because I thought Three from Hell, they're going to go on like some kind of rampage or something, you know. And they don't. I mean, they kind of do. But it's just like, honestly, half the movie, they're just like lounging around having sex towards the end of it. And they're just like getting high and drinking and not really doing nothing for the majority of the movie. I mean, Baby goes ballistic on a few people here and there. But at the end of the day, there's nothing. You know, once it's just like, we're here. I mean, at least there's, you know, beginning, you know, a reason, you know, and then. For everything and like the revenge aspect. I mean, this one just kind of shows up the last 15 minutes and like, oh, here's the revenge aspect. And just like, it's kind of shoehorned in, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I get the reason, but again, it just, it didn't really feel, you know, like it was fleshed out. Like maybe they needed he needed another go at the script and not the writing or anything, just like the general idea of what he wanted. Because like I said, it just goes along, you know, at a kind of slow pace. And it's just like, here's some memorable moments that might have been from Rejects that are in this one now. So let's kind of rehash that idea. And let's rehash this idea with this new character that is, you know, sort of like this character. And then let's take this character out and put this character in its place. And it's just like, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's coming out in a couple weeks, again, like you said, on Blu-ray DVD. So it will be readily available for the public to watch if you didn't make it to the three-night event. I mean, I'm cool. I got to go. You know, I do it for the show. And it's worth it to me to do it that way because I'm able to get the word out for those. You know, again, because we try to do as best as we can. I mean, I'm sure I've read online people loved it, and they said it's a good follow-up, and there's people that kind of, you know, in my book, it's kind of in the middle. And, you know, of course, people don't like anything Rob Zombie. But this one is definitely, you know, just a weak installment of the, you know, like I said, if this one was like sort of like in the middle maybe, and then you have Rejects, I mean, you have Corpses, and then they go through all the shit, and then they have, you know, this one, and then Rejects. I mean, I don't know, it'd be different because a different character would get involved, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it's just it's not the great follow-up that you kind of would expect. And so yeah, I mean, I can't really say anything else. But when it does come out, Ian, we'll get your thoughts on it and see what you have to say and see maybe our opinions differ.
I'll definitely rewatch the whole series, too, just to, you know, get back into these characters.
That universe,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
But going on from that, from our review of Three from Hell, like I said, there is a clown in the movie. Clint Howard plays the clown. That's an interesting scene where, like, you know, if you make us laugh, he won't kill you. So he does all these lame clown gags, and it's interesting. So there is technically a clown in the movie, so it kind of counts for a Caligoria, but it's not the clown you wanted. But going on from that, yeah. Going on from that, we got Scarefest 2019 that took place again in Lexington, Kentucky. So first off, I'll say that I won a free weekend pass ticket in a contest. So I didn't have to pay anything to get in. I got in free. I got a 3-day pass. I only used it Saturday because that's like $25 that I saved, and I'm kind of happy about that. All right, first off, the guest list wasn't anything to write home about. Now, some, I would say, you know, if this is your first, maybe first couple conventions, you're going to love it, right? But, you know, it's 2019. My first convention was in 2009. I've been going for 10 years. So I've seen a lot of good and a lot of bad, especially coming from Scarefest. When it first, you know, it first started in 2008, but in 2009, autographs were $20, base price. You can get everyone $20. Of course, years and years and years in inflation, and maybe a little bit of greed, the autograph prices started to raise, and it became, again, a business, a money-making scheme, of course. And that's kind of the thing that happened this year, because, again, a lot of people that I've seen over the years charge $20, $10, were double, you know, like $10 or $20 more. Again, Kane Hodder, he's there every year. When I met him, he was 20. Now he's 50 because I guess he has like some kind of Legends deal or something like that. But he has a big line. Every time he's there, he has a huge line. The convention, you know, the little convention we met at, Ian. Oh, God, I can't remember his name. Alex Vincent, who the little kid in Child's Play, he charged $10 for your own item. He was 30. And then, like, Felissa Rose, she was $10 for your own item in 2011. She was 30. And then, like, some guests, I thought kind of charged a little bit much than necessary, like Tom Matthews. The whole, like, there's three I wanted to meet. I only met one. And I wanted to meet Catherine Kamel from Sleepaway Camp to get her you know, signature on my Sleepaway Camp VHS with Felissa Rose and Jonathan Tiersden. Again, but she was 30, so like, you know what, I'm going to pass. I can live without it. I wanted to meet Tom Matthews from Return of the Living Dead to get his autograph on my VHS. He was 40, and I was like, I'm good. And the only one I met was Clu Gulager. And again, he was 40, but I thought, again, not having to pay the 25 entrance fee. So you take the 25, you add 15, it kind of worked out that technically it was $15 for his autograph in a sense. And it was worth it because, you know, Clue's getting up there in age, and he's a great guy. And I don't know how many conventions he does nowadays in his age, but he was a great dude. He let me wear his hat. And I thought it was justified because you never know with someone like that because, again, he's up there in age, you know. And, and people are dropping nowadays like crazy. So you got to get it in there. So I felt it was worth it to get his and only his. And it sucks because, again, the other ones were like 30, if Catherine was 20, I would have done it. If Tom was 30, 35, I probably would have done it. It just makes it hard. But, again, people are paying the prices. I mean, Bruce Campbell was there. I actually saw him. I didn't get in his line, but I saw him sign stuff, and it was a sign-and-go thing. So you probably wouldn't have got your $60 worth. And the one thing that I was bringing up and a lot of people I was talking to was bringing up, that it was losing its flavor of what it's supposed to be about. You know, people are going there for, you know, the autographs and the celebrities and everything like that. And they're losing the idea that it's supposed to be about the movies, you know. And, like, people aren't really talking, you know, like, it's selling, like, Funko Pops and figures and all kinds of arts and crafts and decorations and stuff like that. And, like, I was talking to my friend Justin, and I was talking to your friend Kenny Bates. He had a little booth there. And I bought movies off of him. He was like one of the only few people that actually had DVDs and VHS. And I was like saying, dude, we're here for the movies. I mean, people aren't buying the movies. And I was saying, this is the stuff. You never know if it's something good or something bad. So I was like, I mean, for $2, you got to take a chance. I mean, but again, most people aren't like, you know, there's only a few people out there that's like really into the movie stuff and will watch anything. I mean, of course, I mean, there's fans of all different natures. I mean, there's just a different breed, you know, where we discuss it and we sort of live in that little bubble all year, or just every day. And there's like other ones that are just, you know, casual. They want the big named autographs, and I can understand that. And it just felt weird. I mean, just going through there and like, you know, just it's lost cause because again, you go there to try to find new stuff to watch, new movies, new this, new that. Like there was three booths for indie filmmakers. There was two fan films, one Friday the 13th, and one was a Child's Play fan film, and then one film was called Moonbow, which I got in contact beforehand, and we're probably going to have them on and the film to review on a upcoming show. It's in festivals now. It's called Moonbow, and it's supposed to be releasing on Black Friday, and so hopefully we'll be able to review that on an upcoming when it releases around Black Friday this year. So it's like, you know, at least they cared, you know, like that, you know, they're really passionate about, like, we want our film out there. You know, they didn't have any official DVDs yet because, again, they're still in the festival circuit. And it was like, again, they were screening it there at the convention, but it was like on a Sunday, so I wouldn't have been able to do it anyway. And so it's just, you know, you want to see stuff, you know, indie, more indie stuff. And it's just like the whole thing about the convention was like when it first started in 2009, there was like nothing but like indie films. There was like Cockhammer and even the like My Bloody Wedding and D4. There's like all these indie films that was there and, you know, trying to get their films out there to people. And there's hardly, you know, there's a Bigfoot the movie that was there a few years back. And it's just like, it's like losing what it's supposed to be about. And it's supposed to be about, you know, new horror. I mean, yeah, the celebrities are great and everything. And people, again, people were enjoying themselves. I'm not going to complain about that. I'm just saying, like, for someone that's been going there for 10 years, it's definitely not what it used to be. I mean, if you've only been there, you know, this is your first one, your second, you know, your first couple. I mean, yeah, you're going to have fun. You're going to get the autographs. You're going to stand in line. But when you've seen like the prices go from bottom dollar, you know, $10 to Santa Maria's all the way up to, you know, double that or triple that, over time. I mean, it kind of takes the fun away from it because, again, you could get everything you wanted and yeah, you know, you're not going to be out a fucking grand. You know, when I first started, you know, I spent like maybe $200, but that was like $20 each, you know, like, okay, I can get this person, that person, this person. I mean, of course, now that I've kind of held back on my autographs. But again, going back to last year, Brink Stevens and Joe Bob Briggs, they're, in my opinion, they're more legendary, and they're only 20, you know. And, like, seeing some people, especially, again, Tom Matthews, I mean, just seeing, like, Brink Stevens is worth double to me. I mean, if she charged 50, I would have done 50. I mean, I gave her 40 because I bought two things. I got two autographs off of her. But she would have been worth that to me any day because, again, I grew up with Brink Stevens and all her films and, you know, one of the 80s Scream Queens and everything like that with her and Linnea and Michelle Bauer, just like all the stuff that I, you know, grew up with. And, of course, Joe Bob, he's, you know, a legend because he, again, he kind of loved the same kind of stuff that I loved, that I grew up watching. And, you know, he's a legend in that right with all the random weird shit, you know, that he watched and reviewed on TV and just like bringing that to the world in a sense on, you know, on cable television. And, you know, that's kind of like what I'm doing with this, so like more obscure, you know, of course, all the obscure stuff that we talk about on the show and indie stuff. And so like he was worth it too, but he's 20 and you see some, you know, seeing these people that, again, of course, like they're in other stuff, but like, it just kind of doesn't make sense, you know, like Catherine, like she's 30, like you were, what, you know, and you bring Stevens charging 20. It's just weird to see some of that. Again, it's not, I shouldn't really say I'm complaining because again, I kind of am, I kind of not, but again, it's just like when you have some people and they're only doing, you know, charging a certain price and then you go there and they're, you know, like you're kind of wondering like why. You're kind of like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, some of them I can understand. I mean, like, again, Clue, I can understand. I mean, he's a legend. He was in a lot of things. And it's just like, but some of them just like don't make any sense to me, honestly. But I can't really complain. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, about the celebrity prices. I mean, I was looking at GalaxyCon, formerly known as Louisville SuperCon, and Carrie Ewells is charging $50 for an autograph.
Mm-hmm.
And $40 for a picture.
Yeah.
I'm like...
Yeah, see, that was the thing. It was included back in the day. The pictures were included back in the day. You can get an autograph and a picture.
Yeah.
$20, you know. And then, again, I go back to, like, again, I've been doing these for a while. When, like, I met George Romero. George Romero was 30. And seeing someone, some actress from Sleepaway Camp charge that much, when I paid that much for Romero and Carpenter... I'm like, no, you know, you're not worth more than Carpenter was back in the day. I mean, Tom Matthews, 40. No, I'm not going to pay $40. I mean, I'm not. I mean, even Jeffrey Combs, he was 30. But I thought, you know, like, yeah, I've been wanting to see Jeffrey Combs. I got his autograph. I'm happy with it. It wasn't the best experience I had because it was just like, here you go. But it's just an autograph I wanted to get out of the way, you know, because I've always wanted to meet him. And just to see some of these, you know, people that are, again, one or two films, you know, very small roles in those certain films. Charge that much when, you know, you got that price for Romero and Carpenter. I'm like, no, I'm good. And it's just like, again, it's just like, I'm not complaining. I mean, if people enjoy it, they enjoy it. I'm not, it is what it is. I mean, everyone's different. But again, coming from someone who's been going for 10 years, and I talked to a lot of people that was also there. I talked to Kenny. I talked to my friend, even Michael Taylor Pritt, which, you know, great, you know, he's filming a new movie. So we'll have, he'll be coming on again to discuss his new project.
Sweet.
He was there. He was there on Saturday, and he's right there with me. You know, we were talking back and forth and, like, how it's changed over, you know, everything. Like, it just, the vibe is different compared to what it usually was. It's usually, you know, you can go there and just, like, talk horror, enjoy the conversations. And now it's you can barely get a fucking thing started because people don't know what they're talking about. You know, they're only there for the money. And I know it's a business. I know. I understand that. It's been that way for a while now. But the early days, man, when you could just talk to the celebrity and have fun and just go back and forth talking about random things, I mean, it's a lost cause. I mean, now it's just sign and go. Sign and go, sign and go. Here you go. Here's your autograph. Leave here so I can get more people in to get more money. You know, I don't want to talk. I don't want to take any time with the person. Now, I heard Dee Snider, he took time with people, which is cool. You know, like, I enjoy that. And then, like, I walked up to Mick Foley because I'm a wrestling fan. And I wanted to say thanks for everything that he did and providing me, you know, wrestling over the years and keeping me interested in wrestling. But, again, if – I had to go through fucking – I had to walk all the way around the fucking building almost, the back building because of remodeling stuff, and I had to walk in a certain way to get into the line, and there's no one there in his line, so I could have walked right up. And then I do that, and then I wait there, and then there's another a lady and her daughter did the fucking thing that I did, just to walk up to him. And, like, the lady looked at me like, I'm sorry. You know, like, what the fuck is the point? And then I walk up to him, and, like, I told him, like, hey, thanks, whatever, you know, like, thanks for everything you did. And, like, if I didn't, again, I just want to thank him and thank, you know, like, okay, cool, whatever. But he was, like, disinterested for some reason. Again, it's, you want the $40, I assume that. I mean, you want to make the money. And apparently he just didn't want to say, hey, you know, thanks for doing what you did and, you know, keeping me a fan of wrestling and everything, you know, during that time. I never got to see you wrestle in person because you were never around and stuff like that. And it was only on TV, and thank you for everything you did. But it's just weird. But anyway, that's technically Scarefest. It wasn't all that great. A lot of stuff kind of just didn't really rub me the wrong way, but it wasn't all that fun. I mean, I enjoyed the conversations that I had and stuff, and but just the movie aspect and everything is just slowly dwindling down, and it's just going to run itself into the ground where they're going to have to sort of restart everything and maybe make it about the movies again instead of the celebrity autographs and photo ops and line skips and, everything else that goes along with it. I mean, you're going more so about that than you are about everything else, and that's a shame. It should be movies, and then get some autographs in there. Maybe some. They'll have to go down because they're getting like the big names like Bruce Campbell, Dee Snider. Like, where's the little names in there? I mean, that's like half happy last year. But I'm going on. We're getting about to get cut off here.